Welcome, everybody, to the second ever RacerX Canada podcast show brought to you by Shift Racing Canada. You can check them out on the web at shiftracing.ca for more info. I'm your host, Steve Mathis. I'm excited about my guest today. For all you faithful listeners, I know there's only been one show, but I'm sure I have some. I know I said last week that anytime I had Jason Wygant on the show, that meant that no one would call me back and he was the only guy available. But that's actually not what happened. I showed up at Phoenix for the Supercross, and the response from last week's show was pretty good. We had Chad Reed on. He was real open, candid, and he even dropped a couple of swear words in there, which was pretty surprising. But it was fantastic. I thought the show turned out great. I had a bunch of people came up to me and talked about being on it and wanted to be on it, so I lined up a bunch of guest slots for future shows. So I think I won't have a problem getting some guests from here on out. It seemed that everybody listened to the show, but probably Davey Coombs. He might have been the only guy that didn't. But I did end up speaking with the man known as Weege this week because I think the guy has a story, and no one really knows it but his mom. I doubt his dad even knows his real story. He's one of the busiest guys in the business with his announcing as well. Pretty much every press conference and every webcast in the sport goes off with the voice of Wygant across your computer. And a lot of times people don't really know what his backstory is because he's really just the guy bringing you the action. If you add in his GNCC off-road work, his writing in RacerX magazine, Cycle News, I don't know how he has the time to update his blog. And it's called, appropriately enough, Blogant. It's just a cross between the word blog and his last name. And it really took zero thought to make it up. I just thought I would say that. Check it out at RacerXILL.com under the blog section and you can see what I mean. He's a pretty insightful guy. So join me on this magical mystery tour of Jason Wygant's brain, all brought to you by Shift Racing Canada. Shift, the choice is yours.
Weege, welcome.
Hey, I'm glad to be possibly, but maybe not, the first guest ever on this show. You've really, really overextended your reach to get superstars like myself.
Yeah, we'll see if you are the first guest or not. That's yet to be determined, but I know that, without a doubt, I always have Wygant in the back pocket, you know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. There's no money back there, though, unfortunately.
No.
So you're lucky that I'm willing to do this.
Yeah, let's talk about the initial podcast that you did for me a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I did, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. It was a great, great podcast, full of information, full of insight. I believe you even broke down the Racer Productions domination of GNCC and your future plans. But unfortunately, I hit the wrong button, and it was lost forever.
Dude, we had it all. I mean, I'm talking peace in the Middle East, the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, the cure for cancer, AIDS vaccinations, and everything else. And unfortunately, you didn't hit record. And I don't really remember what I said, so I guess it's all gone now.
Yeah, that really sucks for all your listeners out there listening to the Shift Canada, RacerX Canada podcast out there.
So, but go ahead.
But I was going to say, yeah. Maybe we can try to work together again this time. I've hit the right button, and we're ready to go.
It's odd for me because I don't spend much time being the guy being interviewed, so it's going to be tough for me to just sit back and wait for you to ask me stuff, and then I actually have to have an opinion. This is even crazier.
Yeah, most guys don't really think of you as somebody who has an opinion, and we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. You're always just kind of seen as the guy that, like, does the webcast announcing, does the U.S. Open announcing, does the RacerX motocross show, and by and large, the announcers are just sort of faceless commentators of the race, not somebody who actually offers any insight or color. And I think people think of that as you, when actually you're a pretty smart guy.
Well, I appreciate that, and only you're probably saying that because, you know, I was willing to be your first guest twice.
Twice, yeah.
Podcast. But
you're right, that's why I really am
what
saying.
What I've started to figure out over the last couple of years, doing some of the interviews and some of the stuff, the announcing that I do, I thought it was, you know, this great, incredible honor to be put on the front lines and represent the sport to fans as, you know, I used to be. And you know, I used to listen to this webcast every weekend, too, and hang on every word. So it was this great honor. But now what I've realized is in some directions it goes too far where you're just actually doing the work no one else feels like doing. Like, I don't feel like getting interviews with these 12 guys. Hey, you're the guy who does interviews. Can you do it? And then I have a tendency to say yes to all these things because I'm figuring, you know, the more you do, the better off you are. And instead, I think what I have turned into is just this guy that constantly is putting microphones in people's faces and never actually speaking to them in a regular conversation.
Yeah, I
want to rectify that.
I mean, you do. You're everywhere. You're the GNCC announcer. You write for Cycle News. You write for RacerX sometimes. You do the webcasts. I mean, yeah, basically, you're just looked upon as this guy with the microphone, I think. And even Tim Ferry has asked me before in the past,
yeah,
what's that Weege guy like?
Right.
And And you know, I was like, well, he's a cool guy, you know, but nobody really knows that. You don't get a chance to just hang out with the guys.
Yeah, so it was at first just, you know, always trying to say yes, always trying to do as much work as possible to try to work my way up the chain. But now I've realized that that's been good and bad. It's certainly been good, mostly.
Yeah.
But I think to, can I use the term take it to the next level when I'm only talking about announcing? I mean, that's pretty
sure, funny. Why not? It's your next level.
Okay, that's right. I think you really have to have a little more rapport than the guys then. They recognize me as a guy that interviews them, and they usually say yes. That's the rapport level I have at most of them right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. They just look at you. Like,
my buddies want to think that, like, you know, at any moment I can call Ricky and be like, hey, dude, I'm going to be in Tallahassee. I'll be stopping by for lunch. But it's not quite like that. So
yeah.
I need to be a little bit more chummier and a little less business.
Is that going to be your 08 resolution?
That's the 08 resolution, and I'm telling you what, I got a couple of fullbacks that I'm going to follow. They're going to open up the holes. And I'm going to follow them right through to daylight.
Nice.
Yeah. You know what I figured out it is that, and you and I talk about this a lot, everyone in the industry has their little niche, and it's not the person. It's whatever job you have. All the goggle guys are the same. Tire guys are the same. Mechanics are the same.
Suspension guys.
Yeah, suspension guys. Now, what's their stereotype?
Suspension guys, by and large, are a little strange, and they're all very perverted.
So there you go. It doesn't matter who the suspension guy is.
Yeah, no, this is true, because I've been on many teams,
right,
and fired by many teams, and I've worked with a lot of suspension guys, and they're all the same. They're all looking up in the sky, trying to figure out something, calculate something in their brain, grabbing the dirt in their hands and rubbing it through like it's some sort of gold,
yeah.
And then they're perverted. They're looking at porn on the internet. So.
Right, so you know what? That really breaks the riders down, though. I mean, what guy isn't going to bro down with that? It's obviously not a professional setting if they're, you know, talking about porn and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, I don't get to talk about that or anything else beyond how's the track? Did you get a good start? Do you think you can win this year?
Did your tires hook up?
Yeah, so I think these guys are kind of over that. So, and I'm not saying it's icy in any way, shape, or form. I mean, the guys always give me the interview, and they're usually cool. I think they try to give you the benefit of the doubt because, as strange as it might seem to most fans, it seems like most of the riders are pretty good guys deep down. So they tend to give you the benefit of the doubt, but... Hey, I'd like to be buddies just because it helps, you know, to get the real story.
No, for sure. Well, I'll help you with that if I can.
Yeah, you're one of the fullbacks that I'm going to follow through.
Oh, well,
goggle guys, the suspension guys, and then whatever guy you consider yourself.
Yeah, I'm kind of built like one, so that'll work.
I'll follow. And there's some jobs in the industry where, you know, as you always say, the mechanics probably get the most information because no one's afraid that they're going to spill it to the press or the public. And the journalists who are supposed to get the information get the least because everyone is afraid they're going to spill the issue to the public. So I'm trying to bridge the gap there a little bit.
Yeah, I always find, like, now that being a ex-mechanic, a lot of times, you know, a lot of my friends are mechanics. I will get a lot of information, quiet information, big top-secret information, from my old buddies being the mechanics. They really don't get to talk to anybody. They're kind of like shut-ins. Nobody really wants to talk to them. They usually only get talked to when they're getting yelled at. And so if you approach them in a nice way, maybe offer them some food and drink, they'll pretty much open up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So I'm picturing, see here, this is exactly what I'm talking about. I'm picturing them being used as a go-between so many times. If they have a rider who's hanging out in a motorhome all the time or a team manager that's pissed off, the mechanic's unfortunately always going to be, he's a sitting duck for people to ask questions because they're sitting there right in front of the rig working. So I figured that they're sick and tired of having to answer questions and talk to people. But you're saying they're looking for a little bit of respect.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The questions they get asked are by fans, and it's generally like, can I have this? Can I have that? Can I have this? You know, or else always one of my favorites were if you're having a Chinese fire drill and your motor's blown up,
yeah.
The fan leaning over the banner saying, what happened? What happened?
Right.
You know, like, oh, excuse me, sir, let me drop this motor and I'll explain exactly how the connecting rod flew through the cases.
Well, as we know, though, that never happens.
No, no. It's usually spark plug related.
The factory teams can't get better spark plugs on
it. I really feel sorry for the spark plug companies. The spark plugs and ignition companies just get hammered.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
What's that puddle of oil underneath your bike? Oh, we had a spark plug go bad.
Spark plug, and the oil came out through the spark plug. Thread is kind of strange. How that,
yeah, really weird. We'll have to talk with NGK on that.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, here's the thing that I've always thought about, because I've helped you a lot with this summer doing color on the motocross.com RacerX national shows,
yep,
if that's what they're called. Yep. And I really enjoyed it. And it's harder than it looks to everybody out there who's listening. It's not easy to look at something and formulate your thoughts into making it make sense for the listener. And even when Coombs didn't show up for the first half hour of the Texas broadcast,
yeah,
and I had to hold it down,
all right,
I was thinking to myself, you know, what would Weej do? And it's a real skill to be an announcer. And you know, you and Bidas, Rob Bidas, have the ability to set the color guy up where you really only have to, you know, you basically ask him a question. You don't ask him to think too much because it is harder than it looks.
What? One rule I've always made for myself, mm-hmm, was back in the days of Art Ekman and watching the shows on TV and hearing him say the wrong brands, the wrong names,
yeah,
say everything completely incorrectly, and the defense was always, oh, it's so much harder than it looks. I told myself right then and there, well, if I get the chance, I would like to see just how hard it is. So I will never hide behind that excuse. Maybe it is harder than it looks, but it still doesn't you know, dismiss you from having to do a good job. And I kind of feel like I have to say that because, you know, if you're going to criticize other people, and that's kind of what you have to do in the media sometimes, if a rider who's supposed to do well gets 10th, and you say, that was kind of a low-par performance, then I guess you have to have some accountability to doing well yourself at what your job is. And it would be really stupid to say, yeah, but see, announcing is harder than it looks. Riding is easy. Obviously, the riding is the hardest part of all. So I can't hide behind that excuse any more than anybody else can.
Right. Getting back to my question, did you actually do anything in your background that would make you such a good announcer? I mean,
you know, it's very odd, and I'm only going to admit this on this podcast, and I hope.
Wow, a breaking information.
Well, because I've held it very close to the vest for a long time.
Nice.
For fear of just being completely excommunicated, extricated, taken out of the industry altogether. When I was in high school, I did all of the anything that involved any sort of public speaking at all. And that included all the drama stuff, the plays. We had public speaking competitions, all those things. And I only did the acting thing really because I liked public speaking, and that was the closest you could really get to it.
Right.
Like, once I went to college, I was pretty much done with it. I wasn't trying to pursue a Broadway career or anything along those lines. But I really liked doing it, and that was the closest I could come. So I'm assuming that even though that wasn't announcing races, that there's some connection there.
Yeah, there's got to be something that helped you.
Yeah, I don't really know for sure. There's no science when it comes to subjects like this, but it has to be. That's, A, something I was drawn to. And usually, you know, it's like tall people like playing basketball. I wonder why. Probably because they're going to be good at it. I suppose I liked doing it because I was good at it, and then because I did more of it, I got better, and
right,
maybe that's how I got to where I was. But no, I wasn't the guy that was, you know, working his way through doing junior Pop Warner football games, hoping that eventually he becomes Marv Albert.
Well, I got to say, I mean, part of my deal as the host of the RacerX Canada podcast show brought to you by Shift Racing, part of that is kissing the ass of my guests, but I have to say, you're a really good announcer. Bidas is as well. I know he's going to be listening, but I'm telling you, you're a really good announcer, and it is a talent. So,
yeah, and that's what I just always – it's kind of funny to get the opportunity to do that. Like, honestly, I always thought most of the announcers I heard weren't that good.
Oh, really? Wow.
Like, I would love to get the opportunity to do that just to see if it – again, is it really harder than they say it is? And for me, I don't know. It's funny. When you're such – when you're as into the sport as people like you and I are, you know, there's a certain time where, like, that year I became the announcer, or that year I first started working with RacerX. And, you know, in 2000 I wasn't working for anyone. I wasn't in the industry at all. But it's funny, in my mind it kind of all melds together because it wasn't like anything really changed as far as I always followed every race. I always read all the information that was out there. I'm just kind of doing the same thing I always did. I guess now I get paid to go to the races and I announce them, but I feel like it's really no different than being a fan.
And actually that is speaking of Rob Bidas, that is one of his theories on what makes him good as well, and we've talked about it. He said there's some announcers in our industry that really just show up and, you know, they know the riders, they know their information, sure, and then they go home and they go to their regular job. And Rob's theory is that he is such a fan. You know, he can tell you who won the 84 USGP.
Oh, he's amazing with that, sure.
You know, he's such a fan of the sport that his passion and his knowledge comes through just naturally. So
yeah, the one thing I always wonder is that, you know, I don't even, how well will I be able to adapt? I really don't know. Like, I don't know if if somebody said, hey, we heard you do arena cross on speed, can you come and do some FCCA sports cars?
Which, by the way, those arena crosses were not done live.
What are you talking about?
I just found that out, remember?
I was at every single one.
I know, and I didn't realize it, and I thought you were there at the races. So when I talked to you about it.
I get questioned all the time.
Yeah.
Well, you were there, you saw it, and then it's like, do I tell them Santa Claus isn't real, or what do I say?
I was bummed out.
He wasn't there. Yeah, because, heck, for example, there were arena cross races this very weekend when I was clearly in Anaheim, California. So there's just only one way to do it, and that's you can't be in two places at one time yet. Let me figure that out. But as far as you're saying with Bitus, I think that obviously makes a big difference to me. It's always when you like the sport and you want it to be successful, I just figured being an announcer is a good way to try to sell it. So to me, when something big happens, this is my chance to get people interested. You know, if there's drama, use it. So that was always my motivation there. I guess I might not be buying jerseys at the Moto Bowl, but see, I feel like I've already given back to the sport every Saturday night by building out.
That's very sweet.
Yeah.
Where do I rank in the terms of all the color guys you've worked with?
Have you really even been in that? No, actually, let me be honest. Your performance at Millville this was phenomenal during the Kevin Windham's chain broke. There was, I think his chain broke, but then the race was red flag because of Villeman crashing. And suddenly you reeled off like seven obscure, unknown rules in the AMA rulebook as far as holding up the start. And then even told everyone that, you know, the days of the master link. It's like saying that they got to remix the premix in Kevin's 450. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was very surprised they hadn't had the chain cut to the right sprocket size.
But all that stuff was stuff no one had ever heard, and I thought maybe eventually you'll realize that you're not supposed to say any of that stuff.
Yeah,
It's highly top secret for some unknown reason. But for now, until you get scared, I thought it was really cool.
Thank you.
Heck, I'd love to have you be part of the Supercross team. But
yeah, I actually got called out by a Honda guy the following week. They said that they weren't upset about anything that I said, but the guy at Honda was like, listen, Mathis, you said that at Yamaha you used to have chains cut to the right size sprockets so that in case of emergency you could just throw it on without adjustment, without cutting it.
Yep.
And I said, yeah. And they said, there's no way you did that. You're too lazy. And so I kind of got called out on it, but I really did.
Really?
Yeah. I would have like one practice on a chain on a specific gearing, and then I would put it away. And that would be my chain for that gear.
Chain that went with that gear.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know what, though? It doesn't really matter if you did it or not. Once you're up in the booth, or even if you're riding as you're doing right now, nowadays, you really don't have to actually, you know, tell them to do as you do. It's just do as you say.
It's real easy to be the armchair guy.
Yeah, it's really easy to be the armchair quarterback. So it's not really important if you would actually do it in your life or not. You can always say that this is what they should be doing. I mean, it's really easier for people to say that, you know, Chad Reed should have gone a second a lap faster every race next year, and then he could have beaten James Stewart. It's easy to say that. Whether you can do it or not really isn't relevant, so don't even worry about it.
Let's talk about the first two races of the Monster Supercross Series.
Well, Phoenix was awesome.
Yeah, Phoenix was a good race.
Phoenix was an amazing race, and everybody was giving it everything they had. And, man, I was just thrilled to be there. It was awesome to finally have some dry racetrack to really see where everybody stood.
Yeah, the weather was good. The track was good. The track always has good dirt, for sure.
Well, I think I've come around to like that place more and more. You know what's odd, though, about Phoenix? It's always, I don't know if it's the dirt only allows them to build certain type of obstacles or what, but everybody always says it's always very fast, and that track always is very fast. But when you think about, you know, you can, why would a stadium where you could put any type of jumps or turns or obstacles you want, which could essentially slow the track down. It's odd that one track would be faster than another year after year, but that is always the case in Phoenix, and it kind of was again, I think.
No, I think you're right. I think it was. But here's the thing with the Phoenix is that the floor surface is real big, and I think, you know, they only buy so much dirt.
Right.
And so you therefore have to make it work as much as you can, but you still want to, you know, you want to be spread out across as much of the floor as you can. So I think that's always why Phoenix is one of the faster ones.
So instead of piling the dirt up, just
stretch
it
out
in a straightaway.
Yep.
Also, what happens a lot is the riders come into Anaheim 1, and a couple years ago, this was the big controversy. Anaheim 1 was pretty tough. I think this is 06. And then Steve Whitelock decided to tone the track down to make better racing. He thought that A1 was one of these tracks where you pretty much were just racing the track. It was an obstacle course. You couldn't even think about passing people because you were just trying to, you know,
survive
and make your transitions and such. So usually people get gun-shy after Anaheim 1 and they tone it down. But I feel, and I'm knocking on wood as I do this, listen closely, that this
year,
so far, the off-season, and Anaheim won one of the safest years we've had. And I hate to put this on my own shoulders to say this, but normally by about mid-November, you're already disappointed because, oh, this guy stacked it up at the test track. Oh, this guy's not coming 100%. Oh, there goes the close racing this year.
Right.
But everyone has pretty much made it through testing and through Anaheim 1 intact, which I would think would make for better racing. I mean, there were, you know, five guys in the top five in Anaheim, believe it or not. And then there were like 10 other guys that you're like, well, what happened to that guy? He's not hurt. So maybe he'll turn it around. Maybe they'll mix it up. Maybe it'll be different each week.
There were some big names that didn't make either main event in Phoenix and Anaheim. There were some big guys that missed the main events. So
yeah. You know, especially the Supercross class, I think, is starting to go in the direction that I think the industry kind of wanted it to go, which is, you know, they want that to be the premier division.
Right.
That's why it's called Supercross. We're not even going to give it a label. It just is Supercross. And then I think a couple other things contributed to that. The TV coverage is definitely skewed to, you know, the 450 guys get covered next day.
Yeah.
And the Lights class gets covered next week. And I think that's the way they want it, which, you know, in reality, what teams were doing before was just, well, if we can't win in Supercross, we'll just eight-man team in the Lights class. And that's the NFL, there's one league. You know, the NBA, there's one league. Nextel Cup, the top guys race each other every week in the main class. There's not as much ducking and hiding. So I think it's going in that direction. But, man, when you start adding, you know, Joe Gibbs' team in there, they're not even having a Lights team. You know, we're just going right to the top. And teams like that, it's pretty stacked now. There's way more than 20 guys with good rides.
No, you're absolutely right. It's been an interesting season so far.
Yeah, it has. And I don't know, we'll see how it works, but there's so many riders that, like in Anaheim 1, I don't know if he even got to see what they had because it was so muddy.
You didn't really want to make too many judgments off of that.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be pretty interesting. I think it's pretty clear that there's two guys that are pretty far out in front of everyone on speed right now. But I hope that everyone can get into seeing how everyone else stacks up. I mean, in Anaheim, you saw Ferry and Langston. What did they pass each other, I think, five times? You know, that's good stuff. And then who's to say how everyone else is going to mix in? How is Villeman and Alessi and all four Honda guys, you know, how are all these guys all going to mix it in with each other? I mean, that's 8 or 10 guys who you would think would be presumably pretty closely matched. Pretty fun to watch.
You can really tell in talking to you how much of a fan you are of the sport and how, you know, how much you're into it. Did you race as a kid? Are you an ex-pro, washed-up pro? What exactly is your background as far as coming up in New Jersey, which we all know how proud you are of Jersey.
A mecca of motocross. Yeah, well,
because I have to be honest, when I first started reading Blogant back in the day, I'm like, who is this guy? Like,
is that the Canadian pronunciation, Blogant?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Blogant. How should I say it?
I think the accent's on the blog, not the Gant.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know New Jersey is the mecca, and if I didn't already get myself booted from the industry for admitting that I did the plays when I was in high school, I'll definitely get booted now. But I tell you that, nope, no riding, no racing when I was younger whatsoever. I did have some quads and three-wheeler ones. But that doesn't even count.
I think you just want to pretty much resign right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably even worse than just saying I didn't do anything at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any credibility that I've just gotten is gone.
Certainly. Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, I was super into it from day one. But, you know, usually there just has to be that real quick, you know, connection of the synapses. Or your parents are like, well, maybe we could get you a bike, or would you like to have a bike? There was like this invisible wall of this subject would never be brought up.
Jeez.
So I actually used to go to Englishtown, and whatever it was, probably $5 a head to get in those days, and just sit in the bleachers and watch all day, just the regular old, whatever it was, AMA District 6, local day.
You didn't know anybody there?
No, I never knew
at the track?
Person at the races. In fact, here's the funny thing. I started going to races, I think, the first year I was really into it was like 86 is when I really started following. You know, it broke out from the monster truck and mud bog pack. Started really focusing on motocross. So I was like 7 or 8 years old. And I went to the races from, say, then, maybe 8. And I think the first time I ever actually had a conversation with someone else who actually knew something about motocross was about 15 years later. Like, I was 20 years old, the first time I ever actually spoke out loud. I would just go, sit in the stands, watch it, read all the magazines, watch all the races on TV.
That's unbelievable to me. I don't know anybody who just went to the local races and didn't know somebody.
No, but I didn't understand, like, why you would, as I didn't race, so, like, if I introduced myself to someone, I thought I'd just be the biggest dork. Like, I can't go up to Mickey Kessler and be like, I come to the races every weekend, I'm a big fan. That just seemed odd to me.
Were you a fan of Mickey Kessler? Was he your Rick Johnson?
Kessler was a little bit before my time. By the time okay. I was there, he was back to privateer status. You know, he used to be Factory Mako.
Yeah.
That was big time.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, getting some support. But the national number is starting to rise. But mm-hmm. one year he did give Bob Hanna an actual battle. I mean, no one can believe this, but that's kind of the weird thing about Englishtown. This stuff happens all the time. Hey, Kessler battled Hanna, and JSR battled Emig one
yes,
year.
Yes, JSR battled Emig to the death, and
yeah.
then fell down with, what, two corners left?
Yeah, and popped his shoulder.
Yeah, separated his shoulder. But he was beating Emig fair and square when Emig was a champ.
This
yeah.
was in 1997 when Emig was at his zenith.
Yeah, and JSR.
So that's the weird thing about Englishtown. And then, you know, they had Supercross at Giant Stadium for a couple of years. And Unadilla was actually usually the closest race to us. I even got to go to the donation. But actually, I did get to shake the hands of the – I shook DeCoster's hands and Johnson, Ward, and Hanna. But that never spoke to them. And to this day, I've never actually had a conversation with Barry Carson because, you know, he's just too much of a legend.
I'm yeah, yeah, like Reed and Stewart, no problem. Carson,
nope.
No way.
I feel like with him, it'd be like – not only am I intimidated by his greatness, but also I think he would just say, well, are you really from New Jersey? Why have you never spoken to me ever?
Yeah, yeah, and then he would start getting mad.
Yes, and then if I told him because you're too big and too famous, then he'd probably think I was making fun of him. So I'm pretty much, no matter what I do, I'm screwed. I just, you know, it's like once you don't get a guy's name like the first five times you see him, you can't ask, so what is your name the sixth time you see him? That's what it is with me and Carson. It's too late for me to introduce myself.
Probably be like me talking to Rollerball. Same kind of deal. It's too
Has
late.
Has that ever happened?
No. Not
Are
yet.
Are you serious?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet, but I think it's coming.
Wow, this is like Davey and his elusive chase for Evel Knievel. You have never met Rollerball?
No.
Wow.
No, I can't wait, though. I think it's coming. There's something coming down the line. I can't reveal it right now, but there's something coming down the line where I may get a chance to actually hang out with Rollerball.
Maybe
because you know I'm a big fan.
I mean, Rollerball is your
Barry is your Carsten.
Oh,
is your
yeah.
Carsten?
And I'm sure somewhere on those DVDs that you have, they probably raced each other at some point.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I heard that's why Carsten's elbows are always down for fear. The guy next to him always had him up.
Did you go to the Giant Stadium races, Supercrosses? I mean, like, would your parents go? They would take you, or you'd
yeah,
go on your own? Or
yeah. My dad actually. I downplay this. My dad actually worked for Bell Ray, which immediately makes people think, oh, well, that explains everything. But he had nothing to do with the racing department. It was just almost a coincidence. The only thing, what I did get out of that, and I can't thank them enough, was they got all the magazines. And you
oh,
know, their
yeah.
advertising person would read it real quick. Oh, there's our ad. And then either the plan was to throw them away. So my dad would grab them and bring them to me. So that's what I got. I mean, that's how come I read Cycle News. I had basically a free subscription to Cycle News and Dirt Bike and MXA and every magazine from that era. And we would go to the races, but, I mean, it wasn't like I was part of the team or getting pit passes.
Yeah, did you ever read Motocross Action's article about how to sneak into the pits and try it yourself?
No.
No.
You know, my life would have changed?
Maybe.
Wow, no kidding.
Eddie
yeah,
Warren got third at that 250 class in one of those Giant Stadium races. Eddie Warren.
Yeah, that was the first year they raced there, which is 87. That's right.
Who
he
knew?
Was actually leading it for a little while.
Was he really?
Yeah, he actually was. And then they brought him to Englishtown at the end of the year on a 500, and that was the last you ever heard of him. He disappeared to Australia, I think. Was,
yeah,
right?
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah, but it was good. I remember just like everybody has the memory of the guy coming out with like this trickiest looking gear ever. And I remember RJ like hanging out, you know, like 2 in the afternoon with all Aqua Fox gear.
Oh.
Autographs on the, like
yeah.
going up to the wall of the stadium. And it was like the most unbelievable thing I had ever seen. But that was it, just watching from far away. One year, because of the Bell Ray connection, I was able to get into the press box and I met Tony D. That was pretty big.
That was pretty big. I took three of his schools.
Wow, really?
Yeah, yeah, Tony
and
D.
This is automatic with Suzuki, right?
He was Husky.
Oh, wow.
All 3 years I went, so that's how long ago it was, mid-80s.
So there's actually like a little overlap between when they say how long the school's been running. It has not been Suzuki the whole time.
No, it was Huskies. And being in Canada, seeing a Husky was like seeing a spaceship. I mean,
oh, really?
You'd never seen a Husky before, ever. And it was always like, Tony D's got a Husky. Look at that lowered tank.
But what years are we talking about here?
84, 85.
Wow, I didn't even know Huskies were really even. I think there were spaceships in the United States at that point.
Maybe, and I'll never forget that he was teaching us how to. There was a turn, and there was a double double, and he was big man on campus, and he told us that he could quad them, and we all went, really, Tony D? Like, you know, he's going to quad these things, and he came around the turn, he went wide so he could get some speed up, and he jumped, and he clipped the third one with his back tire, because, you know, it was 2-2. It was meant to go 2-2, so the third one was pretty steep.
Yeah.
He clipped the third one and did the most horrific endo I think I've ever seen up at that point in my life.
And this is the instructor at the
This is the instructor, and he just cartwheeled him and his Husky over and over and over. And we all kind of looked at each other and was like, well, maybe the school's over now. And he kind of got up, dusted himself off, and was like, okay, just keep doing figure eights. And then he wandered off to his trailer.
So he had a de facto... like busy work, like a substitute teacher. Just do your multiplications tables, and I'll be right back.
Yeah, pretty much that was it.
Well, you know, after we met him at Giant Stadium that week, the next weekend was a big race in Englishtown. It always comes back to that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it always
comes. He did remember my dad and I, because we had been introduced to him just like 6 days earlier, 8 days earlier. So he was at his trailer, but in those days it wasn't much of anything. And he had a garden hose, and he was trying to kind of makeshift shower himself off after his motos. So he asked my dad if he could wash his back.
Nice.
Yes. Hey, Brian. Nice. Could you help me wash my back?
Oh.
And that was like literally like my brush with greatness in those days.
Oh, I mean, for sure.
We were practically brushing him.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Now, I try to tell that story now and he has no clue what I'm talking about, but it was 20 years ago, so hey.
You're like, dude, I washed your back off.
I washed your back. Dude, I don't get got your back. I washed your back. That was it for me. It was just going to races, being a fan. Would ride ATVs, and not even good ones either. Not even like I can't even say that I had like a 250R or anything. So as it is, they always say in the industry, you stop riding once you get a job in the industry. I actually had to start, so it's kind of hard to work on that when there's not much time. So I do my best.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely. Now, how did you transition from Englishtown Barry Karsten fan to working at Racer X and Racer X Productions, I should say?
Well, like everybody else, you know, you want to get a job in the industry, so I figured, you know, got to start somewhere. So eventually, once I was old enough, I became a yellow flagger at Englishtown.
Oh, you've moved up.
Yeah, I moved up from fan to yellow flagger, and that was pretty much my peak, man. I got, after a good solid year or two, they let me even work that staircase elevator.
The man-made thing or whatever.
Yeah, they change the name of it every year. Eventually, I worked the top of that. I thought that was an honor, but I realized when the races are in March and it's 30 degrees out, that's where there's buzz when the race. There's no competition for that jump. And I would cheer on Carson and Wallace when they're having their good battles. I would actually cheer, which probably just made them think that I was warning them. Hey, they just hear the yellow flagger screaming, hey, and they must think two guys are down on the bottom of this jump.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I was yellow flagger, and then I guess my senior year in college, I actually do have some relatives that live out here in West Virginia, so I'm like, you know, I could probably become an intern or something at Racer X just for a summer. I could work for free because I have a place to stay. And that would be a real cool thing to tell people, like, yeah, you know, I actually even hung out with those guys for a summer and was an intern. Pretty much the goal, just to be able to say I did that once before I got a real job.
You knew who Davey was, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I knew who everybody was. It was, you know, when you follow it closely, it's kind of eerie almost. How well you know people that have no idea you exist.
Yeah, they're like Farber is like a celebrity. Well, no, he wasn't there back then, but...
But at some point, somebody is like that.
And yeah.
In reality, everybody's just regular people hanging out somewhere, but you can't even imagine that they're just regular people. So, yeah, I sent in some writing samples, and I pretty much got rejected. They had this kid, Matt Ware, who was going to be their intern that summer, and he still works here now, so position was filled. They didn't need any help. But I kept on sending them stuff, because once I had gotten rejected, then I was really fired up. And the magazine, I think, was only bi-monthly at that point, and the website, the whole idea of websites was only kind of getting going. So eventually, to expand the website, they just needed content. So Brian Staley over here just said, you know, if you want to send stuff in, we can put it on the web. We always need help with that. We can't pay you for it, but if you want, I didn't need, payment was nothing.
Yeah, yeah, like you weren't worried about payment.
No, I mean, I was flagging for 12 hours a day for $30, so money wasn't really, you know, my number one motivator. So I did that for a while, and then I think it went on for about a year. I got a few things published in the magazine, which my college professors couldn't even believe. This is actually you that actually wrote this, published in a real magazine? And they never really had, I guess to this day, actually, they've never really had a position for me at Racer X, but Racer Productions said the GNCC series was really starting to grow, and they needed some staff there, someone that could do press releases and update their website and take pictures and such. So I got hired there, and that's pretty much the way it is right now. So one day at Englishtown, they asked, okay, who's going to be back in 2 weeks? And I said, you know what? I'm not going to be able to do any more races this year because I'm going to work for Davy Coombs in Morgantown. And I'm sure to this day they thought that I was on some kind of drugs.
Right? Yeah, they're like, whatever, flag boy.
Yeah, I mean, most of the flaggers are pretty shifty as it is.
Right, right.
So they heard that one, oh, okay, yeah, you're going to drive your car made of gold home too?
Yeah, very, very Carney-like atmosphere with the flaggers.
And every track has that. We had a guy named Ultimate, and who, Haddington, he, even in the middle of the summer, he'd wear full coverage because it was cooler because he would not be exposed to the sun. He'd wear, like, full overalls and sunglasses and all. And I think every track has that same guy.
Probably. Now, you do the GNCCs as the announcer. You go to all of those as well. Talk about this past year in the GNCC. David Knight came over, pretty much showed everybody that when he had no problems,
right,
he was going to win.
Here's the crazy thing that what Juha Salminen laid this groundwork, and then Knight does it too. I don't know if people actually realize how good these guys are, because the craziest thing is, not only that they win a lot of the races in the GNCCs, and people have won a lot of races before, but it's how they win. The thing that I always liked, I didn't follow the GNCC tremendously close before I worked there. I mean, I knew who the guys were, and I knew who the champion was and stuff like that. But the first race I went to is this race in Ohio, and it was the greatest racing I'd ever seen because it's a three-hour race. So guys would purposely, you know, I'm going to hang back in fifth for a while, I'm going to take the lead for a little bit, then I'm going to hang back again. And, you know, used to motocross and supercross, you'd never see that. It was the fastest guy gets the whole shot, it's over. There was no strategy, there wasn't any back and forth. And that's the way the GNCCs always were, and it was awesome. And that's why I grew to like it so much. But what these guys have actually done is managed to turn it into a three-hour supercross-type race where, you know, usually once they get the lead, they're fast enough to pull away from everyone. And with all the dynamics, A, it's 3 hours, so, you know, no one can ride at full speed at any point. There's no way you can do that for 3 hours. So the fact that they're fast enough, even if another guy decides, well, screw it, I'll just give it everything I got for the next 20 minutes, and at least I can pass the guy, they still can't pull that off. And the other thing is, there's so much lap traffic out there, I would say it's like a pace car. I mean, if you try to pull away, that's just going to make you collide with a lapper even quicker, so it doesn't help. So the two of them, the fact that they're so fast that they've managed to overcome all that is really amazing, and it almost disappoints me when people go and they're like, yeah, Knight kind of, it was a good race, you know, he was battling for a little bit, and then he kind of checked out, and I'm like, no, you don't understand, by GNCC standards, that's terrible.
Yeah.
That's how good this guy is.
Yeah, no, I've been to a couple of them, I've raced a couple of them, I've been to three of them, I think, and those guys are definitely underrated, no doubt about it. That's a real gnarly race.
It's cool because the few times that any motocross guys have come, besides Doug Henry, which pretty much anything involving Doug Henry doesn't really count. He's the exception to all rules with everything he's done. But besides him, the motocross guys have never been super successful, and it's just because of that, because they might actually be better riders, and they might even be in better shape. But just understanding the strategy of how you do a three-hour race, when to use your energy and when not to, how to avoid tangling with lap riders, and you don't have practice, so you've got to learn the track as you're racing. That stuff really throws people off. It's kind of this, like, voodoo science that some guys learn and some guys don't, and that's what makes it pretty cool. There's a little bit more to talk about there. Unfortunately, as we well know, when it comes to Supercross, sometimes there's just not much more than meets the eye. You see it, and that's pretty much what happened. Getting really fast, and that pretty much sums it up.
Is there any way to compare the GNCC scene to the Supercross scene? I mean, is there anything that's the same?
No, it's so different because, and one of the craziest things is, and this, for better or for worse, everyone and everything is so much more approachable. And that's kind of nice, too. I've had a couple of weekends a year where you have to go from a Supercross on a Saturday to a GNCC on a Sunday. And it's night and day, just as in, and I think Supercross gets further and further as it gets bigger and bigger. It gets more and more removed from, you know, the
reality.
Now it's their trucks, and if you want to talk to them, they're hanging out. And GNCC is getting bigger too, so I'm sure eventually it'll go that direction as well. And by then, Supercross, you'll have to arrange interviews months in advance, like it works in NASCAR, you know?
Yep.
But the guys are so much more approachable. But you know what, that's what comes with making less money and not being as famous. That's really what it comes down to. I think people are routinely surprised about that when you go to the races, how approachable the guys are. But they don't really know better. There's no reason to hide from the fans because they haven't been burned on a message board and been booed to the races. And the sponsors aren't calling them and saying, because you said that, that just cost us $50,000 in sales, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's pretty much common knowledge around the supercross and motocross. I think that, you know, one of the most normal guys, one of the most normal top guys would be Tim Ferry. He's just
a real normal dude. Bring him up as a model example.
Right? I know. It's just a coincidence. But if you could find someone in the GNCC equal to Tim Ferry and just their most normalness kind of guy, is there a guy like that?
Yeah, no doubt. The guy who really is kind of the best rep of this is what GNCC is all about is Barry Hawk. I mean, Knight's the champ right now, but he's an anomaly. He's not even from the United States. He didn't come through the ranks like most of the GNCC guys do. The kind of the thing that makes Knight so famous and so cool is because he does stuff that no one else can do. Barry's really just like everyone else. He's just a little bit better at it, I guess. And the guy has won. He raced the ATV series and switched over to bikes, which makes absolutely no sense. But that means that he relates to everybody. Every GNCC guy, bike and quad, knows he's the man. Every guy that he knew in like 1991 when he first broke in on quads, he's still buddies with those guys now, even though he couldn't be further removed from that way of life.
From that scene, yeah.
Yeah. He's just the most regular guy. I mean, I can call him right now and say, hey, what are you doing? And, oh, you want to go riding? Come on up, you know. And it's kind of weird when you see guys like that. And I don't know if Timmy or Barry think in those directions. You know, that's really what makes them so popular. And, you know, by being popular, it makes them more successful. It makes them more valuable to sponsors. But it never appears like they're doing it for any business reasons whatsoever. And maybe they're not. Maybe they're just naive. And it's the only way they know how to be. But being that approachable helps. I mean, if you have a choice between getting a quote from the guy that's mean and the guy that's cool. Well, a couple months ago, I went up to his house to shoot some video. And there's two times of the day that he says he's pretty much works his life around. And that's when his daughter gets off the school bus and he's got to walk down to the end of the driveway to get her. And then later on, the UPS comes and he gets all his parts. Yeah, and that's like still a big deal for him, like when FMF sends a pipe.
Very exciting.
Out that day. Yeah, that's like the big news for him. So it's definitely, it's almost like you have to, you know, pretend you're someone you're not sometimes, like to be that down to earth. But it's pretty cool that they do that. And Timmy's really the same way, too. The children's book.
Especially considering that Kawasaki hired him to just be a test rider.
I don't know where you got that information.
Yeah, I don't know either. But
he hired it because he's good at testing, but he's
yeah. Yeah, you're not going to live that one down because he thinks that you said that also. So,
but you're your own worst enemy here. Thanks to you, and I will thank you for this on the air. Thanks to you, all the barriers have been broken down between Timmy and I. Now we're tight. Now he knows that I'm good.
And now you're going to go behind me and become a better friend.
Oh, oh man, that'd be stiffer competition than racing Barry on the quad.
Yeah,
that would be tough.
Now, who's the Ryan Villopoto of GNCC Racing? Who's the kid coming up? Who's the guy that's going to maybe beat one of these imports that KTM keeps flying in?
Yeah, there's a kid named Charlie Mullins and this is how GNCC works. If you're on the West Coast, you've never heard of him. If you're on the East Coast, you're like, a kid named Charlie Mullins? I know who he is. He's Villopoto in that the years and the ages and the way his career has progressed is very similar. But the way he rides is much more of a, you know, like a Ronnie Lachine type, where if you were to ask him what he's doing right or what he's doing so well or why he's going so fast, he doesn't really know. He just does it.
He just rides.
And Villopoto's not giving you any information either. But you know somewhere that the kid's working hard because you've seen, you know, the struggles when he was trying to beat Mike Alessi, and he's obviously worked to go as fast as he has. You know, and you know Randy Lawrence somewhere is cracking the whip on him. If you asked Villopoto about it, he would just say, we train hard, we ride good, thank you. But
yeah, do you not agree with me that Ryan Villopoto needs to be more interesting?
Yeah, it would help.
I mean, I'm not bagging on the, you know, everybody's got their own personality, but
right.
He's going to have the mantle here,
yeah.
I think, as either the guy or the next guy.
Right.
And I just think he needs to, you know, besides telling us about the guns he buys.
And we only use that gun thing so much because it's the only thing anyone has to go on.
I don't think it's really
that big a deal if we had something else.
Yeah, we really don't know much about him. He's not real engaging with the media. He just kind of goes fast.
I think I wouldn't even worry about it too much right now, though, because what's funny is I remember hearing about, and again, this all goes back to English Town. I think in 94,
oh, Tom
came on a KX80 and he did some knack-knacks, and that was like the first year of the knack-knack. And it was unbelievable. And everybody's like, oh, this kid's unreal. He's going to take over. He's so cool. He's so cocky. And then they interviewed him, and it was about the worst interview I'd ever heard in my life. And they remained the worst interviews for almost about 10 more years. And then finally, he started to figure it out. And by the end, you couldn't really ask for a much better ambassador for the sport ever. And I wouldn't put Villopoto really much further behind him at the same age. So I think it'll be okay. And you always heard that behind the scenes, Carmichael was a really cool guy. He was actually really funny. But it took a long time for that to come out.
Josh Hill came out to the Yamaha track in 03 and jumped triples on his YZ80.
What has that got to do with?
Nothing. But just I have the same sort of story, maybe.
Oh, just the I saw him before he was famous?
Yeah.
That's not even – I'm not going – 94 is nothing. I mean, there's people in Florida that I'm sure said that they saw Big Rick like hanging out smoking a pack of cigarettes when he was 18 years old, 20
okay.
years before Ricky was even conceived. I mean, in the battle to say you saw it first, I'm not even in the running. But my point just is, he wasn't much of a personality either, and I think just because of the constant exposure to it and realizing that this is the way it has to be, he turned out pretty good. So, and the few times I've seen Villopoto kind of away from the scene, he's much more, has much more personality than you see when he's got the microphone. So I'm not giving up yet. I'd say 5 years from now he might be saying, hey, remember when everybody talked about how Villopoto was so shy?
Well, now look at him. He shows up with a disco ball at the races.
He's getting better, man. He really is. And he's even got some sort of statement with this odd facial hair thing he's running, this Wolverine look.
Yeah, kind of like a hunter guy or something, huh?
Yeah, trying to have some style. So, you know what?
He's going to be Grizzly Adams soon.
Wow, and red. The funny thing is, like all these guys, a lot of them are so young. They go through this strange transformation period. Even if they're like 14 and they're, you know, a pretty cocky kid for being 14 and they're pretty fun and cool kid, a lot of times when all this stuff gets thrown in their face, you know, all this money and all this pressure and probably all these media tips and lessons, it's kind of hard to unscramble them all at first. They kind of all go through this period where it gets scary for them. It's seen it happen a lot. I mean, Davey Millsaps, when he first turned pro, like refused to speak to anyone. And then like 3 years later, he was the funniest guy to talk to in the press conferences. Grant Langston, when he first came here, was just this real quiet guy. Now, he talks more than any other rider. Brock Hepler, I remember when he was young and he raced around this area in Pennsylvania, he was real cool. Then it seemed like he was just a nervous wreck anytime you spoke to him for about 3 years. Now he's starting to be a regular guy again. So it's kind of hard to judge, I guess, when these people, as I say, you're not even an NFL starting quarterback until you're 22, 3. Here you're pretty much already at your peak before that. So that's a lot to heap on somebody. You know, James Stewart's 22.
Yeah, that's an excellent point for sure. Something
22.
That maybe the message board people and the media needs to keep in mind.
Yeah, he's 22, and he's supposed to carry the sport on his shoulders, where if you were 22 in any other sport, you'd basically just be a rookie.
It's an excellent point, Weej.
I'm full of a man.
Okay, well, that should do it pretty much for the Racer X podcast interview with Weej, brought to you by Shift Racing Canada. I thank you, Weej, for doing this again.
Yeah, doing this again. Man, I'm looking forward to Anaheim 2. It's going to be good after a good one in Phoenix.
Yeah, for sure. Anaheim 2 is going to be really good. Retro night. Now, are you under instructions to do anything different?
He told me he can't fit in any of his clothes from 1986, so he doesn't know what he's going to do. But I told him, dude, I was 8 years old. Do you think I can?
Yeah.
So I might wear his stuff.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah. See, I'm like a porcupine.
All right, well, you have a good day.
Thanks for calling.
All right, see ya.
So that's it for another RacerX Canada podcast. This week was pretty good. Weej is a pretty interesting guy, and I'm hoping to get one more special guest in this week in honor of Anaheim 2 Retro Night. So I'm going to go way back in the time machine and try to bring a real good guest for you guys maybe later this week. We'll see what I can do. But anyways, thanks for listening to the RacerX podcast show, brought to you by Shift Canada. Shift, the choice is yours. See you next week.